Next matter is Gonzalez-Mendoza versus Burdick.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Diana Chamberlain and I represent the plaintiffs in this matter. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
2 minutes, very well.
My clients are Benjamin, Pedro, and Ephraim. They are hardworking, family-focused men. They were injured when their vehicle was rear-ended by defendant. They incurred reasonable and necessary medical expenses, and they sustained pain and suffering. Plaintiffs are seeking a reasonable and just verdict or award for the injuries that they sustained. Unfortunately, the trial court's errors in this matter prevented that from happening. Each trial court error compounded the one before and resulted in an unjust verdict. I like to focus on two of the arguments in plaintiff's brief. The first is the trial court's motion or decision denying plaintiff's motion to exclude Bradley Probst from testifying. And then I would also like to focus on the motion for new trial. There are no less than three reasons why Bradley Probst's testimony should have been excluded at trial. The first is that his underlying methodologies do not meet the Frye test. Your review on this issue is de novo. To meet the Frye test, underlying scientific methodology must satisfy the standard that there be no significant dispute in the relevant scientific community about that methodology.
The Frye test only applies if it's a novel. What's novel about momentum and forces and
what's
speed
novel,
to vehicles?
What's novel about this this underlying methodology, Your Honor, is the use of delta V and conservation of momentum as applied to the second methodology of this idea of an injury threshold.
So you agree that momentum, if you take high school physics, is not novel.
I agree that the law of physics of conservation of momentum is not a novel methodology. It's the use of that concept as applied to the second idea that there is an injury threshold that is novel.
Okay.
And while this is most likely an issue of first impression in Washington, precisely because the Mile Court down in Division II did not conduct an actual Frye test, several other jurisdictions have determined that this use of the methodology is not generally accepted.
Well, isn't the other jurisdictions, they're conflicting decisions on this. Is it not the case?
I believe there are several jurisdictions that find it to be not generally accepted. There may be some others. In fact, in a case out of this jurisdiction or this division last year, the Stedman v. Cooper, on which Judge Spearman was on that panel, they sided with positively two cases identified by plaintiffs in their opening briefs.
But by doing that, they also said in that opinion that within the state of Washington, there were conflicting decisions about whether this methodology could be used. Is that not the case?
I believe the only Court of Appeals case on this issue is the Mile Court. And
No, my point is, in Stedman, they talked about this particular expert having been allowed in some cases to give this type of testimony, and in other cases within the state of Washington not being allowed to give the testimony.
Yes, Your Honor.
So within this state, there are conflicting resolutions at the trial court level, right?
Yes, okay. And that is actually with a different expert. That is with Dr. Alan Tenser. In this case, the expert is Bradley Probst. He's not a Ph.D., they do have similar uses of methodology. I'll just jump forward to what Stedman ultimately held, which was that because it's an abuse of discretion standard, if you look at whether the evidence satisfies 702 and then also under 403, that it is very fact and case specific, despite the fact that it is an abuse of discretion standard. So if it is manifestly unreasonable or based on untenable grounds, the trial court's decision, then it's an abuse of discretion. In this case, the sole basis for the trial court's decision allowing Probst's testimony was the Mile holding and rationale. And once again, they are completely different experts.
Let me ask about preserving the error, because normally a motion to exclude evidence would preserve the issues raised there. But here at trial, when you got to the critical part midstream in Probst's testimony, there was an objection that you made saying, he's getting into medical causation, Your Honor. You can't let him go there. And the trial court says, I didn't hear that motion to exclude. either you guys are in agreement on what the scope of this testimony is going to be, or you're going to need to brief it up for me. And ultimately, you both said we've reached an agreement, right?
I believe we reached an agreement to the point of what he would be allowed to testify to based on the earlier trial court decision permitting his testimony. I did object to the fact that he's not a medical doctor and can't testify as to whether or not this injury or this collision caused these injuries. He did stop there. Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. What's the difference, though, between Tensor and Probst is Tensor testifies he would not expect the plaintiffs to be injured in a collision. Probst actually says that there's no injury mechanism, which means that they couldn't have possibly been injured in this
collision. Where in his trial testimony did he say that?
I don't have the sites directly in front of me.
Because when I looked at it, when you get to the critical question, I think he was asked that question, but I think his answer is we have very limited force applied to the body in an event like this.
Mm-hmm.
What about that is an improper statement related to causation?
I would say that if that is what he said at trial, then it's closer to what Tensor has testified to. In his report, he specifically says there's no injury mechanism. And those studies that he relies upon have said for that exact point that there's no injury mechanism, which then leads to that danger of misleading the jury, saying
we're,
that
we're limited to what he said, testified, though, to at trial, not his report, right?
Okay. I would like, with the limited time that I have left, I would like to move on to the motion for new trial. The standard here is abuse of discretion, and Palmer is the case on point for this issue. In this case, there was abuse of discretion on several levels, first with respect to the medical specials and then again with respect to pain and suffering. The undisputed medical testimony at trial was that the plaintiffs were injured, the injuries were caused by the collision, that they incurred reasonable and necessary medical expenses, and that was the testimony about the medical expenses. Defense did not present its own medical expert. So you have Dr. Romero's testimony that all of this was reasonable, necessary, and related, and nothing on the other side. Our cases, Hills v. King, Sultanow, all say that if there's undisputed medical specials, we are entitled to those, and the jury is required to accept them.
What if there's evidence calling into question causation, though?
Even in that case, Your Honor, as long as it's undisputed, and in fact, in the Hills case, the impact severity was disputed, but the defense did not present a medical expert, and in that case, the Supreme Court remanded for a new trial. They specifically found that the verdict was a result of passion or prejudice. And I would further state that in this case, the fact that the jury awarded the first chiropractic visit, but then awarded all 3 months of the massage therapy treatment, evidences its passion or prejudice against chiropractic treatment. They found that these plaintiffs were injured, and they found that they required 3 months of medical treatment to resolve those injuries, but then they didn't award all of the undisputed medical specials. With respect to pain and suffering, there's two lines of cases, two premises that you can really come to from the lines of cases. The first is that where there's no defense medical testimony disputing the pain and suffering element, a new trial is granted. Palmer, Kleva, and Washburn, on which you wrote, Judge Cox, are all on that side of the line. On the other side are the cases cited by defendant, Robinson, Harriman, Lopez, and Amy, which you also, well, that one wasn't cited by defense, but it's a case that I found on which you also wrote, Judge Cox. But in those cases, all had a defense expert saying that they weren't injured, that it was a minor injury, or something to dispute the element of pain and suffering. I'll address the last bit in rebuttal. Thank you.
Very well.
Good morning, Your Honors. Kelly Sweeney on behalf of Ancion Burdick. The jury returned a verdict in this matter that was based on substantial evidence, and that was fair. It seemingly gave to the plaintiffs involved in this matter one chiropractic evaluation and approximately 9 massage treatments. This was no doubt reflective of substantial evidence in this case, including that it was a minor impact. There were no injuries reported at the scene. There were no police or medical personnel called to the scene. There was no damage noted on the van in which the appellants were traveling noted at the scene. And there was only, following a dispute about the property damage that was involved in the matter, did the appellants then seek out the assistance of an attorney who then referred the 3 appellants to the same chiropractor. The jury verdict in this case was no doubt reflective of the fact that the appellants waited 37 days, over 5 weeks, before they first sought chiropractic treatment, again, from a chiropractor that they were referred to from their attorney in this matter. The jury is no doubt the jury's verdict is no doubt reflective of the fact that this chiropractor that the three individuals involved in the matter were referred to diagnosed them all with soft tissue injuries based only on their history that they had been involved in a motor vehicle accident 5 weeks earlier.
What do we do with the fact that you didn't have any contradictory medical testimony?
Well, what you do with the fact is, as Your Honor has pointed out, there was a dispute regarding causation. I mean, there was a dispute regarding the nature of the impact. There was a dispute about the time period in which they waited to actually seek medical treatment. So that's all evident in and of itself that they weren't injured and from which the jury could have drawn the conclusion that they were not injured. It's not, at least case law in this state, that you need a medical expert to say that somebody was not injured. I mean, in fact, that's where really what the appellant is trying to do in this situation is to shift the burden in these types of cases, to shift the burden to the defendant to prove that somebody was not injured instead of holding the plaintiffs in the underlying cases to their burden of proving damages. And so that, Your Honor, really goes to one of the issues in terms of either the directed verdict, the trial court's failure to a direct verdict, which we haven't argued here today, but it also goes to the motion for new trial. And the cases that are relied on in both of those situations are essentially put the burden on the plaintiffs. They must prove their damages. And in this situation, they did not prove damages. They did not prove all of their special damages, one, and they did not prove general damages. And so I'm kind of floating between those two issues that are involved here. But the fact that there was no medical testimony is insignificant, given that there's enough facts from which the jury could have gathered that these individuals were not injured, based on just the nature of the impact, their delaying seeking medical treatment, the fact that they were referred to a chiropractor by their attorney, and the fact that this chiropractor based his conclusion that they were injured only on their history and self-report that we had been involved in an accident 5 weeks earlier.
What else would he base it on?
Your Honor, that is the question. When I continually scratch my head in these cases, and with no disrespect to the chiropractic profession, that's what they base it on.
Physicians also typically rely exclusively on history.
You're absolutely right. And so that is important in a case like this, because how can knowing, and I haven't been doing this probably close to 15 years, these types of cases, have not seen a chiropractor yet, nor a physician who will look at an individual who comes in their office and give them the opinion, you were not injured. Again, they base it on the history. I was involved in a motor vehicle accident. My back hurts. My neck hurts. And then they come to the conclusion, yes, on a more probable than not basis, you sustained injury in this accident. And so knowing that, how can a defendant defend against one of these cases if it was not going to be ultimately up
wouldn't
to the jury
present,
to decide?
Wouldn't you present other medical testimony? I mean, you'd have him evaluated, and your medical person would come in and say, no, I don't see any injury here.
Your Honor, that was my point, that very few medical providers, if any, I haven't seen one who will say they were not injured, a medical professional. Usually what happens in those types of situations is they say they were not injured to the extent of the chiropractor.
Well, then that's the testimony you have.
Yeah, well, in this situation, we didn't present a medical testimony,
right.
a medical professional. So, again, you can't find a chiropractor who will say somebody was not injured. If anything, they would say, given the complaints from the individuals, they most likely were injured in this car accident, and then they would maybe prescribe the amount of treatment that was appropriate. Mm-hmm. That's typically what happens. You have a chiropractor who will say, limit this to 2 months soft tissue treatment.
Well, in this
six
case,
weeks.
When the jury did award some specials, isn't that the issue that's actually in front of us? What evidence do you have to present to call into question otherwise undisputed specials for actual treatment incurred? Don't you have to have somebody who comes in and says, wait a minute, maybe a month's worth what is okay, but not 3 months' worth?
No, Your Honor, and that's not what the case law suggests.
What does Bill
in
say?
This situation, the evidence that we presented was not medical testimony, but it was through cross-examination of the chiropractor. So in a sense, that is medical testimony. It came to the jury through the cross-examination that this chiropractor, in terms of the appellants involved in this case, did not consider that they were roofers. They had hard labor jobs. They came to them 5 weeks later. The medical professional in this situation did not, or actually testified that those types of situations, you can see injuries to your back or your neck or complaints in that type of job. So given that, given the 5-week delay in seeking medical treatment, given the nature of the impact, given a dispute in terms of the amount of the damages that were involved in this case, there was some dispute, and we haven't talked about the Probst issue, but there was a testimony that was not objected to in terms of Mr. Probst's recommendations or opinions regarding accident reconstruction and how this accident happened, and basically calling into question when the plaintiffs testified that there was damage to the side of their doors or there was other damage to their vehicle. That in and of itself is calling into credibility the plaintiffs, so that's one thing that the jury can look to as well to believe whether or not they were injured. And I think it's instructive that in this case, and you alluded to this section in the record, in fact, where the trial judge was confronted with the motion to either direct verdict on medical specials. And the trial judge in this case actually said, you know, I've handled 20 of these cases, and they're always for the defense. And it was argued, well, you haven't provided any medical testimony to refute the damages in this case. And the judge recognized, yes, they have. They've called into question the credibility of the plaintiffs. It's also ultimately up to the jury to decide whether these plaintiffs were injured. And so that is in and of itself, without having to bring in a chiropractor to say, again, we couldn't find a chiropractor, first, not to suggest we tried in this case, but to say nobody was injured. It just doesn't happen because, again, all they're going to do is rely on the history that the plaintiff gives to them when they come in, as is appropriate. But it's very difficult for them to come in and say, yes, somebody came in, told me I was injured in a car accident, I have a sore back, I have a sore neck, and you're going to get that opinion. So in this situation, the jury should be allowed and was allowed by the trial court properly to consider the other circumstances and ultimately just believe whether the plaintiffs were telling the truth or should be believed when they say, 5 weeks ago I was involved in a car accident, my neck hurts, and you have a chiropractor say that, well, it's because of the accident.
How do you reconcile the Hills decision?
The Hills decision, all of those cases that were cited, Ide, Hills, let me get to my notes on that one. Which one was this? This was the MVA with a dispute over the nature of the impact. Actually, the Hills decision, Your Honor, they found that there was passion and prejudice in that, okay, because there was no controversy over the amount of the special damages. In that situation, Your Honor, both doctors, the plaintiff and the defendant, the doctors in that case, testified that the plaintiff should have been fully recovered within 2 years. So in that situation, there was actually medical testimony on the behalf of both, and it was undisputed that there was injury, and that apparently, from what I read in that case, the defense doctor agreed that, okay, there was an injury, but they should have been resolved within 2 years. That's a completely different situation than the one at bar where we contested that there was ever any injury in the first place.
But if your argument is that you can't find a doctor anywhere that's going to come in and testify that, in fact, every doctor will come in and testify that they were injured, doesn't that sort of tell you something? I mean, isn't that sort of, they must have been injured. I mean, that's the doctors are all saying the same thing.
Well, I don't think they're saying all the same thing, Your Honor, but I think that's a scary situation where you can never have a motor vehicle accident where somebody was not injured.
But, so, I mean, then you would argue, I guess, about the credibility of the doctor or something, because you're saying your evidence shows that there was no injury, but you can't find a doctor who will testify to that. That's
based on the history of, no, Your Honor, based on the history that's given to them.
Right.
You will not have a doctor who says, a patient comes in and tells me their neck hurts and they were involved in a car accident. You're not going to have a doctor that will say they didn't sustain some injury based on the history that the patient gave them.
Right.
That I was involved in a car accident and my neck hurts and my neck didn't hurt before the car accident.
Right.
So you're not going to find a doctor that based on that history will not diagnose an injury.
Well,
so in this situation, just
if the medical doctors are all convinced that there was an injury, then that to me that's sort of significant.
And in this case, there were no medical examiners that testified. And again, it's very different situation, Your Honor, in terms of providing that the plaintiffs prove their damages. And the plaintiffs did not prove damages in this case, and the jury verdict should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to start right with that last point that Judge Spearman was making. Ms. Kelly argues that they aren't required to present medical testimony. In the Ide Court, our Supreme Court specifically said that in response to a similar argument that oh, the jury might just disbelieve all of the plaintiff's experts. They say the difficulty with that argument is that, carried to its logical conclusion, there never could be an inadequate verdict because the conclusive answer would always be that the jury did not have to believe the witnesses. Palmer says the exact same thing. The defense argument that special damage are still a matter of legitimate dispute because the jury could conclude that some treatment was unnecessary was wrong, where the defense presented no medical testimony to dispute plaintiff's expert. I would like to go back also to that causation issue. The line of cases under Palmer that found clear causation of the injuries related to the collision all have clear doctor testimony. That was Palmer. In Cleva, she had several years without a prior back injury and was a waitress full-time before the collision. In Hills, they disputed the impact severity but no prior injuries. In Ide, there was no conflict about his pain and suffering. This is very similar to the case at bar. Plaintiffs had no prior similar injuries, no prior motor vehicle accidents, no prior chiropractic treatment. And the doctor testimony from Dr. Romero is very clear about the causation of these injuries. On the other hand, all the cases cited by the defense involve muddy causation, is what I call it. In Cox, he had 4 motor vehicle accidents in 4 years. Richards, his own doctor, said that he didn't know what caused his hernia. In Heston, chronic back pain and prior injuries. Prior pain and also not disclosed to his treating providers. And then in Bliss, there was no doctor testimony to connect the injuries to the motor vehicle collision. This case, the evidence, it comes down to what is in the record. And the evidence in this record is very analogous to Palmer. A new trial should have been granted. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The next matter.